did you find this?
Craig.
Hello.
Craig is here. It's, oh my God, it's episode 88 of TH Fantasy, you guys. What do you think?
Dude, we're creeping up.
Dude, what are we going to do at 100? Nobody plays double zero.
I got some ideas. We'll talk about them off air. But before we get started, I want to say happy Bobby Bonilla Day to you guys.
Right. Yes.
Today, July 1st, and every July 1st until the year 2035, Bobby Bonilla will cash a check for $1.19 million from the New York Mets.
Yo, steal from your employer.
It's so cool.
Awesome.
Just like Devonta Parker, steal from your employer by being bad at your job.
I cannot believe Devonta Parker got a contract extension.
$11 million a year.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I just want to pull this up once again because it's always worth mentioning. Warren Sharp, for his Sharp preview, says his wide receiver separation from defender rankings using next gen stats in 2020, he was 132 out of 132, the worst separator in the league. In 2021, he was 127 out of 127, still the worst separator in the league. And in 2022, he was 122nd out of 122 wide receivers. 3 years running, worst wide receiver at separating in the league. Just got an extension. Good for you, man.
Do you think Bill Belichick is just trolling everybody at this point? Like, he cannot be that bad at analyzing wide receiver talent, right? Like, there's no way someone can be that good of a coach and be like, this is my blind spot.
I'll answer your question with a question. If Tom Brady, like, still great, but like later era Tom Brady, if he was a quarterback for this team, do they win the division?
Probably, right? Like,
most likely.
There you go.
But like, he's the Ohtani of football, right? So.
All right. So we got some 88s. Ryan, the last few episodes, you've been leading off, and I'm always happy with the way it goes. So.
I got a good shout out this week.
Okay.
All right. A famous number 88. You guys are going to love this name. Mr. Dick Witcher.
Oh, hell yeah.
All right. Mr. Dick Vernon Witcher, born 1944, was drafted by the San Francisco 49ers in the eighth round of the 1966 NFL draft. 6'3". Played 2 years at Bakersfield College, then graduated from UCLA. He played in eight NFL seasons from 66 to 73, all for the San Francisco 49ers. There's not much about this guy, so I'm trying to pick out like the best thing to read here.
Besides his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I saw the name and I was like, I gotta at least say something about him. He had the worst injury he ever had was a separated shoulder.
Fell off his broom.
Yeah, right. it looks like his best season was an 18 reception season.
There we go.
In 1971. He also served as a backup tight end because he was tall.
Naturally.
A.T. Perry errors, baby. Let's go. Ugh.
Oh, yeah. After in 73... He actually joined the Chicago Bears training camp, but he was cut by the Bears and therefore decided to retire.
There you go.
Not too much interesting about this guy, but his name was freaking awesome.
That is pretty solid.
Dick Witcher.
Dick Witcher.
Dick Witcher. Hardly knew her. So I'll go next because my guy involves injury and the 49ers. Because it's always magically tied in somehow together.
Yep.
So I think we can all believe and like confidently say that being in the NFL and staying in the NFL takes a lot of good luck and like really good fortune, right? Yeah. Like even though like you do put yourself in like your entire life to make it to that moment, you still have to have things go correctly.
Sure.
My 88 is kind of the opposite. I would say he's the person of definition who has bad luck. So my 88 is Mike Sherrard. So Mike Sherrard was a four-sport athlete in Chico, California, playing basketball, baseball, track, and of course, football. He'd walk into UCLA where he'd redshirt, and after breaking his finger in practice, which would set the dominoes falling in the order of what the hell is going on with Sherrard.
So we have back-to-back UCLA guys. That's awesome. Fuck yeah.
Ryan and I are in this hive right. mind. Just our Neuralink is just activated. Elon sends us the notification of, hey, here's the line you guys got to follow this week. So the following year, he'd get mono during spring practice and get two receptions the whole year. So when he finally was able to see the field in 83, he'd get a full season and set a single season record for 48 receptions with 709 yards. He was also the first player the first player to have two games with more than 135 yards. He'd repeat this effort to be the first player to have more than 40 receptions in 2 years, setting a college record for UCLA.
Okay.
So while the star was rising, Sherrard would break his clavicle in the fifth game of the season. He would come back and score a touchdown in the Rose Bowl before being drafted to the NFL. So the Cowboys actually traded up to draft him at 18th overall in the 86 draft, being the second wide receiver ever taken in the first draft by the Cowboys.
Oh my God, that's so funny because if you'll recall, they were going to take Jerry Rice in the draft, and the Cowboys or the 49ers traded up ahead of them. So now they're trading up in the first round to get a receiver like 2 years later. I love that.
And they traded up with San Francisco.
Oh man. Holy shit. I'm freaking out.
They're like, hey, you beat us on this guy. We're going to beat you on this guy. Wrong. So in his rookie year, he'd post 41 receptions for 744 yards with an 18.2 yards per catch average, leading his team with touchdowns with five. So he's doing pretty good his rookie year. I mean, that's someone who in Dynasty would be like two firsts.
Right.
So things are going great for Sherrard, but unfortunately he'd be tripped by a defender in training camp the next year, which would lead him to shattering his tibia and fibula in his right leg.
Jesus, were they playing on a fucking sidewalk?
I have no idea, but someone's like, it sounded like a gunshot. It was the scariest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Oh,
God.
So he'd missed the entire 87 season. During this rehab, Sherrard would refracture his tibia and break his shin bone while jogging in Santa Ana.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so he re-entered the same leg.
That's horrible.
So the Cowboys would then cast him to the depths of free agency because they kept saying he was injury-prone and he didn't want to show up to the game, and I'm like, no, he broke his leg twice. It's okay.
Fuck.
Where he'd actually go to sign to the 49ers, which is the team the Cowboys were traded up for to get Sherrard. So the Niners win again. Sherrard would only play in the playoffs as the 49ers just wanted him when it mattered, where he'd get 40 yards in the Super Bowl, in Super Bowl 24, getting him a ring.
Good for him.
Yeah, I mean, do the bare minimum, right?
Yeah.
So in 1990, during the seventh game of the season, Sherrard would break his right fibula again.
Oh my God.
Jeez.
So he'd have a little good streak of fortune here. So he'd play the next 2 years healthily. So he'd be all right for a little bit. In 93, he'd sign with the Giants where he'd rack up 433 yards in six games, but would dislocate his left hip and fracture his hip socket.
Oh my God.
Complications would arise and he'd have a blood clot in that side of his leg.
Oh my God.
That's crazy.
I don't know what generational curse he has placed upon him, but I was reading this. I was like, after the second injury, I was like, all right, this guy's just cursed.
Oh, no.
So in 94, he'd have his career starts with 14, total 14 games played, 53 receptions for 825 yards and six touchdowns. He would go on to miss most of the following preseason with a hamstring injury and would play 13 games before rupturing a blood vessel in his right knee.
What the fuck? What the fuck?
That's ridiculous.
I think he had some autoimmune disease that was like not diagnosed at the time. Like, there's no way that happens, right?
Well, I'm speechless, man. I don't even know.
Yeah. So he's alive today, being held together with a shoddy mixture of duct tape and super glue.
I bet you he has like great sex. Like the universe, like like balanced it out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Hey, your body's going to break all the time, but like you always get the best parking spot.
Yeah. But we're going to give you a 12-inch dong.
All right. So I'm
a true dick witcher.
So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to talk about a guy that also injuries are a thing. He did not play at UCLA. I'm going to go with Michael Irvin this week. I think he's the most interesting person to wear the jersey number. Did you know that there's a thing called the 88 Club in Dallas, which I thought was just a white supremacy organization, but it's all the famous Dallas wide receivers that have worn jersey number 88. So it's Drew Pearson, it's Michael Irvin, it's Dez Bryant, and it's CeeDee Lamb. They actually did like a Chipotle video of them all talking about what they get in their Chipotle orders.
Are they doing a rail of Coke off the back of CeeDee Lamb's burner phone?
Oh, we're gonna talk about cocaine. Really, the story's about Michael Irvin, but it's really about cocaine. So when you find out about how much of a interesting character Michael Irvin was off the field, you might be a little surprised that he kept getting trot out on national television to talk about ball. Michael Irvin was the 15th of 17 children born in Fort Lauderdale.
Yo, dude, like, how does that work? Does it just like a little gun come out of his dad just says bang after a point?
So I listened to a podcast. There's an excellent podcast called Crime and Sports that did like a 3-hour episode on Michael Irvin, but I don't want to like copy what they said. So I'm just going to TLDR. Like, they were really poor, shockingly.
17 kids is fucking expensive.
No shit, right? They had a two bedroom house.
Oh my God.
The boys slept like 4 to a bed and the girls slept 4 to a bed, and they converted the porch and garage to living space, which may solve the beds problem, but does not solve the hunger problem.
This is a gulag, dude.
Yes. Yes. He manages to be a star football and basketball player in high school, but he gets suspended for what's called a minor misunderstanding, which of course nobody goes on to explain.
That's an AB statement.
Yes, it is. His dad transfers him to a private football academy, and actually the public school sued the private academy about like his eligibility and ability to transfer. But long story short, they were like, oh, you're not going to let me play here. I'm going to go somewhere that will let me play. So he goes to that private high school, kills it, and he gets recruited to play ball for the University of Miami. Now, I don't know if you guys have ever seen the wonderful documentaries, 30 for 30s, The U. But
yeah,
they're fucking awesome. And so when we talk about The U and the relationship it had with like white America, a lot of that comes from those teams that Irvin was a star on. Old stodgy white dudes fucking hated this team because they were hanging out with two live crew. They were going to nightclubs. They were celebrating like excessively on the field, like obscenely, right? And they also whipped everyone's ass. They went 1-1 when they played back-to-back national championship games. They lost to Notre Dame in the game that was called Catholics versus Convicts, which is so aggressively racist. I don't even know.
I was going to do that for my 88, and I was like, I'm just going to step over this one. This is too ugly to dip into.
Yeah, basically, it was pretty whatever. So Irvin, on a team that was loud, aggressive, and talented, Irvin was one of the loudest, most aggressive, and talented players on that team. So, like, fuck you, racists. He gets drafted in the first round by the Cowboys in 1998. They had one shit season, and then they hired Irvin's college coach, Jimmy Johnson, to come coach the team. Their first year, they went 1-15, and Irvin tore his ACL in week 6. The Cowboys then in between, the Cowboys traded Herschel Walker to the Vikings, which put a pin in that for next week. And with some of those picks, they drafted Troy Aikman, and really the dynasty starts here. And Irvin is like a huge part of the success. So starting in 91, he was a Pro Bowler in 5 consecutive seasons.
God damn.
I'm not going to do a ton of stat porn here because the stuff that I find most interesting about Michael Irvin are not statistical. he wins some rings, performs well. He ends up retiring after a hit against the Eagles where his neck and head were driven into the artificial turf and he suffered a non-lethal spine fracture. This moment is actually infamous because audio and video from the game shows Eagles fans loudly cheering as Irvin was stretchered off the field temporarily like paralyzed.
Fly Eagles fly.
That's so good. Good job, Philly. He actually was told like he was, I think he was going to be cleared to play again, but they were like, yo, if you take another hit like that, like you will probably not walk again. And he's like, nope, I'm out.
Tua, listen to this podcast.
Right, right. So his career total is pretty impressive. He had 750 catches, 11,904 yards, 87 touchdowns. So he also leaves behind an on-field legacy. We have two rules still to this day in the NFL known as the Michael Irvin rule, informally. First off, Michael Irvin was the king of offensive pass interference. The king. His patented push-off did not become illegal until the late 90s.
That's so great.
I know. Just fuck it. Get off me. And when the rule was first passed, it was informally called the Michael Irvin rule. Like offensive pass interference was literally called the Michael Irvin rule. Secondly, the other Michael Irvin rule is making it an unsportsmanlike conduct and 15-yard penalty to taunt an opponent while on the field.
Okay.
See, I hate that penalty. I like taunting. As long as like people are like good spirited about it, as long as it doesn't break into a fist fight, like talk your shit, point your finger, you know what I mean?
Right? All right, so let's talk about some off-the-field Michael Irvin stuff. He had quite a nose for the cocaine. He's had 4 sexual assault accusations. He was arrested for cocaine and weed, both of which I don't think are a huge fucking deal because I'm not a fucking narc. So the 90s Cowboys all went in on a huge party house. All right? No one lived there.
Sure.
It was called the White House. All right?
Oh, my God.
And they would all just take women there to like cheat on their wives with and just do tons of cocaine. And it wasn't even just coordinated. You would just walk in and there would just be a guy there strung out on coke with like 3 women.
Open door policy.
Pretty much. Like he was caught multiple times with coke by the cops, which like, here's my thing. If the cops are walking up to you and you've got coke, just snort that shit. Destroy the evidence, dude.
Yeah, right.
I have 2 more little things I want to put in. I don't know if you guys remember this, but a few years ago, he got in trouble for saying on air that Tony Romo played so black that his relatives must have gotten it on with slaves.
Wow. You said that on air?
Yes, yes.
Do you know what game he was broadcasting?
It was like a... It was like a ESPN, like a Monday Night Countdown or something like that.
Okay.
You can Google it. It's fucking hilarious.
I'm going to.
You should. He's been kicked off both ESPN and the NFL Network for various comments or off the field incidents. I am going to save the best story for last. So here it is. In July of 1998, Jerry Jones flew a barber in to get the guy's haircuts before the preseason started. Offensive lineman Everett McIver was in the chair. Irvin showed up and demanded to be put in the chair at that moment. McIver told him no, and they started fighting. During the fight, Michael Irvin grabbed a pair of scissors and stabbed McIver in the throat, just barely missing his carotid artery, which would have killed him.
What? Oh my God.
Jerry Jones gave McIver at least 6 figures to not go to the media with the story, and the cover-up was eventually known as Scissorgate.
Yes.
I'd be asking for more than 6 figures from an oil tycoon. I'd be like, hey,
yeah, right.
I don't ever want to have to worry about money again.
That's a good point. So before we go, Michael Irvin is in the Miami Sports Hall of Fame, the Texas Sports Hall of Fame, the Cowboys Ring of Honor, the Florida All-Century Team, and the Pro Football Hall of Fame. That is Michael Irvin.
Hell yeah.
What a fucking maniac, dude. Holy shit. Yeah,
seriously.
Yep.
All right. I want to talk about one of the greatest wide receivers in NFL history. Also, is the best Denver Broncos wide receivers in all NFL history. I want to talk about Demaryius Thomas.
There we go.
All right. Famous number 88. Born in Georgia. He grew up as a very introverted and shy child because he had a very rough childhood. His house when he was really young was raided by the police because his mom and grandmother were selling coke and crack. his mom, I guess, got 20 years and his grandmother got life in prison, actually. So he ended up growing up with his aunt and uncle. But Barack Obama, being the upstanding citizen that he is and one of the greatest presidents in the United States, commuted those sentences later on in life. And his mom actually got to see him play in a football game.
That's dope.
Yeah. Yeah. So he basically, you know, outside of seeing, I don't know if he ever went to jail to like visit his mom or grandmother. I'm sure he did. But yeah, it's cool that Obama did that, and
thanks, Obama.
His mom got to see him son play football.
That's really cool.
Yeah, he went to Georgia Tech for college, and almost left there because they were during his time there. They were developing a very run heavy scheme, so he wasn't getting like a lot of attention. He did some great plays, but it wasn't really until he was drafted by the Broncos where he emerged as, like, you know, the greatest wide receiver and everything we know about him. NFL debut season was 2010. In that debut, he had 8 receptions for 97 yards and a touchdown, and they defeated the Seattle Seahawks 31-14.
Ooh, that's Legion of Boom Seahawks too.
Yeah. And guess who his first career touchdown was thrown to him by? Someone we talked about either last week or the week before. I think it was last week.
Oh, it's the King Neckbeard.
Yeah.
Kyle Orton, baby.
Yeah, Kyle Orton. He was just the 9th player since 1970 to record at least 8 catches in his first rookie game.
I thought you were going to say he was like the 9th. One of 9 guys since 1970 to catch a touchdown from Kyle Orton.
Thomas had the 2nd most catches by a rookie in franchise history, trailing only Eddie Royal.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, who had 9 in a game against the Raiders in 2008. He had a lot of injuries, though, in his rookie season. And missed a few games. And actually missed more than a few games. He ended the season with 22 receptions for only 283 yards.
Okay.
And then in February of 2011, so, you know, around Super Bowl time of that season that the Broncos were playing in his rookie season, he tore his Achilles tendon working out. And was expected to miss the majority of his sophomore season. And he was one of those freaks who, like, came out of that injury, and I think he came back around game 7 of that. It was, like, October. So that rehab was, what, that's, like, 8 months?
That's
so crazy. That's pretty grand. You know, most people are out for a whole year.
And that's, like, basically a career-ending injury, too.
Right, yeah. And then, of course, he came back in October and then broke his left pinky finger. So he came back week 7. Yeah, like I said, week 7 against the Dolphins. And at that, this season, Tim Tebow was the quarterback now. He caught his first reception from Tim Tebow for a touchdown. And Denver won 18-15 in overtime.
Okay.
That's the most Tim Tebow NFL stat ever.
And he only had 4 receptions the next 5 games because of Tim Tebow. And then in week 13, he broke his leg. First 3 seasons of the Broncos, not looking good, right? Yeah, so they made it to the first round of the playoffs that year, actually. Yeah, he caught the game-winning 80-yard touchdown pass from Tebow. That's right.
Yep, you see that on every, like, top plays compilation. Whatever. See that all the time.
So then the 2012 season, he was coming off surgery to remove pins in his left pinky that he broke in the season before when the Broncos announced that they were signing Peyton Manning. Here's where it gets really interesting.
Hell yeah.
And this is, I remember that 55 touchdown season dear to my heart because I had Peyton Manning in fantasy football that year.
Didn't need to draft any other players. Just put Peyton against everybody.
And I got him so cheap too because nobody thought he was going to translate well going over to the Broncos.
That was Noodle Arm, right?
Noodle Arm was 2 years after he joined.
Okay.
The first year back, he was throwing fucking rocks, man.
But that's after he had his neck fusion surgery, right?
Right, correct. Okay.
That's right, yeah, he had that crazy neck injury, yeah. So despite reports describing the connection between Thomas and Manning as kind of shitty, Thomas found success in the Broncos' first game of the season against the Steelers. Down 13-7, Thomas, in a move reminiscent of his game-winning touchdown in the playoffs, burned the Steelers with a 71-yard catch and run. The touchdown was notable because it was the first touchdown Manning had thrown in the NFL for a team other than the Colts, and it was also the 400th touchdown in Manning's career.
Damn.
Making him the third player in NFL history to reach that milestone. He finished that game with 5 receptions for 110 yards and the touchdown.
So good.
Thomas then set regular season career highs in both catches with 9 and receiving yards with 180 in the road loss to the New England Patriots on October 7th. Week 8 against New Orleans, he had 7 receptions for 137 yards and 1 touchdown. He tied his career high of 9 catches in games against Carolina in Week 10 and the Cleveland Browns in Week 16. He registered 3 catches for 37 yards and 1 touchdown in the Broncos' double overtime loss to the Baltimore Ravens in the playoffs.
Oh, I remember that game.
Yeah, he ended that year with 94 catches for 1,434 yards and 10 touchdowns.
Good God.
Obviously led the team in targets. That was his first year for the Pro Bowl.
Everyone on that team fucking ate, man. Eric Decker ate. Yeah. Julius Thomas ate. Everybody ate.
So the 2013 season, he started strong. He had 5 receptions for 161 yards and 2 touchdowns in Week 1 over Baltimore Ravens. And he also took a screen pass for a 78-yard touchdown. This was quarterback Peyton Manning's 7th touchdown pass of the game, which tied him with 5 other quarterbacks for the most in a single game in the NFL history. And a lot of those 7 touchdown games were thrown by very famous quarterbacks. But take a guess who has a 7 touchdown game.
It's Nick Foles, right?
Yeah, famously Nick Foles of the Philadelphia Eagles. It was like, I think it was the year or two after that.
Those were those was it Chip Kelly offenses that like always sucked ass, but every once in a while would just like crush everything.
Right. So not only did in the 2013 season, this was the Manning 55 touchdown season. So like I said, he caught Manning's 400th touchdown the year before, but he also caught the 55th touchdown on the season from Manning. That year he was 4 yards short that year from the year previous. He had only 1,430 yards.
Garbage.
But he had 14 touchdowns this year.
Really saved his fantasy season.
Then he had the most touchdowns of any wide receiver that year. Also went to the Pro Bowl. Yeah, he also caught Manning's the season after 2014, he also caught Manning's record-breaking 509th touchdown pass. That was the day he had 8 receptions for 171 yards and 2 touchdowns. And surprisingly that year, he got outpaced by Antonio Brown because Antonio Brown put up 1,619 yards that year on 111 catches.
AB was, before zero RB was a thing, Antonio Brown was a first round fantasy pick.
Right.
Because he had, what, like 3 years in a row where he was top 5?
I think it was longer than that, yeah.
After Manning left, he didn't put up as great of numbers, you know, obviously.
You mean You mean the quarterback, the team that was quarterbacked by Brock Osweiler?
Yeah.
yeah, but he's tall, Tony.
He was really tall. No lie.
And his you know, he was getting older, so the Broncos ended up getting rid of him. Like in 2017, 2018, he ended up going to play for the Patriots and the Jets.
That's right.
And was done after the 2019 season. But this guy has so many Broncos records. Let's see. Receiving yards in a regular season, he got 1,619 in 2014. Receiving yards in a single game, 226 against the Arizona Cardinals in 2014. Receiving yards in a single game in the playoffs, 204 against Pittsburgh Steelers on January 2012. Receiving yards in a playoff season, 306. Receiving touchdowns in a regular season, 14, as I mentioned earlier. Receiving touchdowns in a playoff season, 3. So it doesn't say very much about the Broncos' history in the playoffs. But games with at least 100 receiving yards. Guess how many he had?
Was it over 20?
Oh, yeah. It was over 30. 33.
Damn.
Most games with at least 100 receiving yards in a single season. 10 in 2014.
Wow.
Yep. Most games with at least 2 receiving touchdowns. Tied with Ed McCaffrey at 10. Consecutive games with at least 100 receiving yards. Guess how many games he consecutively caught 100 yards games. 12. Was the 2014 season.
I'm going 5.
7.
Damn.
Consecutive games with at least 100 yards in the playoffs. He had 2 games in a row where he had over 100 yards in the playoffs. And consecutive games with at least 5 receptions. He did this in 2016. Surprisingly, not a Peyton Manning season. 16 games in a row. And we all know the tragedy of his life. In 2021, he was discovered unconscious at his house in Georgia and was pronounced dead. I don't think anyone really knows what it was to this day, but it's believed to be a seizure brought on by a car crash that he had 2 years previous. And his brain was actually donated to Boston University for examination. And it did test positive for CTE.
Yeah.
But that is the greatest Denver Broncos wide receiver in history, number 88, Demaryius Thomas.
He was one of those, there was a hit that he took that was one of those big, one of those hits that made the league change their policy on like kill shot style hits. Like,
God, I hate fucking. That sucks so bad, man, to be the guinea pig, right? Of like, yep. Hey, your entire life being ruined is now why we can't do this thing.
Yep. And a big shout out to Demaryius Thomas because, like, but I didn't hear a single person with anything bad to say about him his whole life.
No.
You know? Yeah. And obviously after he passed, everyone celebrated him. I got to give a shout out to anyone who was a good football player with Kyle Orton, Peyton Manning, and Tim Tebow as his quarterbacks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Imagine being a wide receiver with Tim Tebow.
And Brock Osweiler for the latter part of his Broncos career.
Garbage.
You think those guys know, right? Like, when those players get drafted or brought in, they're like, there's some hope, but they're just like, shit.
Yep. Yep. There goes all my shit. Yep. All right, so speaking of, we got some teams to do. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back, and I think we're going to start today with the Denver Broncos. We're going to keep it Broncos-themed here.
Let's ride.
All right, we'll see you soon, and goodbye. Hey, friends. Tony from TH Fantasy here with a quick programming note. Just to remind you, what we're going to be doing going forward is we're going to be splitting the summer research episodes up into 2 smaller bits
for your listening enjoyment,
because I don't know how many people have time to listen to 2 hours of football talk in their lives, not to mention just in one sitting. So what we'll be doing is we'll do our number of the week in our first episode, and our second episode will be the last two of our three team reviews for the week. Hopefully you guys enjoy. We put together a ton of research on them, and if you have anything you want to add or tell us that we're wrong about, please reach out. Just make sure you are subscribing and giving us money, because that's really important. Thanks. Let's ride.
Fuck. I hate the Broncos talk. That's not even as a Chargers fan. It's just like, Demaryius Thompson is the cool part of it, but doing this exercise with the Broncos kind of sucked.
Sure. I did it too, and I feel like the Broncos are one of those teams that everyone is planning for, like, a bounce back season. And yeah,
I was going to say, no high hopes for Russell.
I think they're going to bounce back, but I don't think, like, I think that bounce back is relative, right? Because they were so fucking bad last year.
They'll be above average. And this is my shortcut to, like, my info dump that's coming up. But I think Russ is the only person who's actually going to benefit in fantasy from this positive progression. I don't think it'll be outstanding, but, like, there's just too many mouths to feed here where I don't believe, like, one guy can be, like, the quote unquote fantasy steal of the year.
All right, take it away.
So last year we saw whatever the hell happened in Denver. I think my summary for that team could be summed up in four words of LeMayo, what the fuck?
Yes.
We saw Patrick Starr dunk on Russ. That was on Christmas, right?
It sure was. Like,
God, what the best Christmas gift we've ever gotten as football fans. But I'm going to kind of take that year as a blank slate, because there were so many things that went wrong and it didn't feel real. Because they only had to score, what, 3 points in 10 games or something like that to make the playoffs. Some ludicrous stat. So the bright side of this whole exercise is a Peyton is going to the Broncos again, but it's Sean Payton, another headhunter, with his new offensive coordinator, which I didn't know about till Tuesday, till Tony messaged me. He's like, did you know Joe Lombardi is the offensive coordinator for the Broncos? And I said, ain't no way. So I'm going to do a quick summary of the offensive tendencies of Peyton and kind of combine them with Tony's cliff notes, or my cliff notes of Tony's talk about the Chargers, and how I think these two pieces of the puzzle form the foundation of how we should kind of look at the Broncos going forward this year. So I took apart all of New Orleans' offense whenever Sean Payton was the coach. I know he missed 1 year. I was going through stats and I was like, why are they really bad this year? And I was like, oh, Bounty Gate. There it is.
Bounty Gate.
So during his tenure in New Orleans, Sean Payton ran an offense that passed the ball 57% of the time compared to 43% of the time rushing, where Drew Brees would throw an average of 617 times per season. And I really don't want to make, like, the comparison between Russ and Drew Brees, because they're different levels of talent. I still think they're both Hall of Famers, but they have a different play style in relation to their expected volume, because Drew Brees wasn't a scrambler. He was more of a pocket passer.
Sure.
So there are big caveats to this data, right? Because Sean Payton and his long tenure in New Orleans had really great players who did a lot of different things, like Reggie Bush, Jimmy Graham, Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara. So these numbers kind of fluctuate over time, and the averages do have spikes in years, where some years it was like 40% passing to the wide receiver and then an even split of the remainder to the tight end and the running back, which is like a pretty big anomaly in regards to how most teams have a different target share. So here's the breakdown on average for the tenure of Sean Payton. So an average of 52% targets to the wide receiver, 27% to the running back, and 20% to the tight end, with the remainder of going to the fullback, because Sean Payton likes to do a little bit of chaos, and he also, on average, has one play a year where he targets a big man. So get ready for a big man attempted touchdown this year from the Broncos.
I like it.
That's so good. I'm so excited.
I'm excited to see what happens, honestly. Like, I know I was just kind of downplaying it, but I think Sean Payton's a good enough coach where this team is going to be coached up and they're going to be playing above their ceiling of skill. I mean, the defense is going to be obviously like it was last year, but fantasy, I don't know, because as I was looking at these stats, there were some seasons where if you didn't have Michael Thomas, Jimmy Graham, or Kamara, you were just crushed in fantasy. You just picked the wrong guy on the team where there was only one asset that was valuable, because there was Tony and I were talking off air where there was, I think Jimmy Graham had like 160 targets one year, like 140 as a tight end. It's like ridiculous numbers. Michael Thomas had like 150 one year.
Yep. Oh man, heyday with Jimmy Graham was so awesome.
So I think this is going to kind of fall in line with like how Joe Lombardi was last year. Granted, it's different circumstances, but last year on the Chargers, you had Eckler, or you were just crushed because things just went sideways and the scheme only was feeding one person, obviously the best weapon available to them. So I'm going to go a little backwards on this one. So the Broncos had 5 draft picks in 2023. As you know, they moved most of their talent or their assets to pick up Russ. And one of them is which they moved up to trade my dog, Marvin Mims, in one of the most convoluted wide receiving rooms in the NFL. They drafted 3 defensive positions and a center. So they're trying to increase their offensive line. According to PFF, they've improved 10 slots to the 11th best offensive line as of June. And we're going to see how that improves Russ's ability to not cook for 45 seconds every play.
Mm-hmm.
Because according to PFF as well, he was the 6th most pressured quarterback in the NFL last year. So he was under a lot of scrutiny.
Oh. And
that's why a lot of his accuracy issues came, that he was kind of doing the Sam Darnold thing, I'm seeing ghosts, because his accuracy was like really atrocious when he was under pressure. I think it was like 40% or something like that. All right, so this leads us into the first reason why the Broncos collapsed last year, Mr. Unlimited Russell Wilson. So I'm not really sure what happened last year. I think all that money made like his firmware crash in his Android brain, and he never got the update to actually translate somewhere else.
That's what it seems like, right? Yeah.
Maybe it's that Subway commercial. I don't know. Or he was just too goofy and his persona couldn't take it. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, it's classic. It happens to all the great guys that get paid a crap load of money, and all of a sudden the next season they just fall off the planet Earth.
I think Russ is also a psycho, though, right?
He's very performative, right? Like, I don't think he's like a serial killer in the context of like stabbing somebody in the neck for a barber cut haircut, but like I think he's a true like maniac. I mean, we saw it last season, right? He's doing the high knees and shit at like 11 o'clock at night to warm up his hamstring, waking up all his teammates on an overnighter.
What was the? Did you guys ever watch What We Do in the Shadows?
Yeah.
The
vampire show. Yeah. Right?
Russell Wilson is the like the energy vampire guy.
Oh, the energy sucking vampire. Yeah.
Yeah. The one that's just a
psychic vampire. I think that's what that's called, right?
Yeah. But it's like he just walks around his team bus and like drains the souls and energies of all of his teammates.
I mean, there's what, fist fights on the sideline with them too? Like, how often does that happen where a team just fighting each other?
He didn't have the sway to be a fucking weirdo like he did in Seattle.
Nope. That swagger was gone. Nobody gave a shit. So I'll get the bad out of the way so we can end on a happy note. So I'm just going to stat dump here of how bad Russ was last year. Like, almost Mariota bad.
Oh, that bad?
Yeah, he was pretty atrocious in regards to his statistics and his metrics. So Russ was the 6th most pressured passer, like I said, 4th in interceptable passes, 5th in danger plays, 26th in true completion percentage, 31 in pressured completion, 31 in play action completion, 20th in red zone completion, 21st in clean pocket, 26th in under pressure accuracy, and 28th in deep ball accuracy. So I think these are all correctable metrics, right? Like, so if the O-line's improving and Sean Payton just gives him a new firmware update, I think if he can improve his accuracy issues or whatever mechanics he was doing or basically not cooking for as long as he needs to, I think these numbers can definitely improve to at least an average of 15 to like league average. Yeah, so I think it was just because Russ was allowed to cook too much and Nathaniel Hackett didn't know how to rein him in and was way out of his depth as a coach. So I believe the rumors of the demise are greatly exaggerated this year for Russ, and Peyton has proven that he can get workable efficiency from Jameis Winston in the in years past. So if 40 for 40 Jameis can rein in his accuracy and his efficiency, I think Russ can definitely do it. So even with those atrocious stats, Russ was 12th in pass attempts, first in deep ball attempts, 8th in air yards, and 8th in dropped passes. So some of those accuracy issues weren't all on him. A lot of stonehounds in that room. We'll get to Cortland Sutton.
Yeah, Russ's deep ball stuff was super interesting to me. I didn't realize he was such a fucking downfield bomber last year.
He loves the moon ball.
Yeah. Ryan, I was starting to read Russ Wilson stuff, and I'm like, oh my God, this is who we want Derek Carr to be.
So he does still have rushing upside, as he is a scrambler, and he can average about 5 yards per carry with a 55 attempts per year. So there's a little bit of juice on there as potentially a top 12 rushing quarterback, 40 to 80 attempts a year, that nice little buffer cushion to artificially inflate. And if he's throwing for 4,500, if they're attempting to throw 600 times a year, there's a good chance that he can crack 4,000 yards pretty easily with 200 rushing yards a year. So after looking at the depth chart, either those rushing attempts were more designed runs last year to increase from 18, as the passing volume, I believe, will kind of increase as we saw in New Orleans, because I don't really believe that there's a running back room this year. So they're going to have to be able to force the ball more, or they're going to have to do more quote unquote RPOs for us, where he's just going to have to do his best Jalen Hurts impersonation.
Okay.
So I don't think he's going to MVP. He's not comeback player of the year. That's just not going to happen. But I do think he will be startable at a point. I won't really draft him just because his ADP is so low and there's better options, especially how I play the game, where I can take a quarterback in like round 8 and be like, all right, I can get Kirk Cousins. I'll be fine.
Sure.
But I do think he is the best option on the potential waiver wire if a team doesn't draft them. So like if you get Trey Lance like I did, and I got Goff last year first 2 weeks, I think Russ will be enough to carry you through the teams or through the year. I think he'll be a fine QB2 with QB1 upside in Superflex especially, and he's a potential cheap play in DFS when we come to those points of matchups and finding out defensive setups.
That's what I wrote. I wrote he is my ideal quarterback 2 in Superflex right now. If I'm in a redraft or underdog best ball, he's the best case scenario for QB2.
Yeah, and for DFS, at least for the beginning of the season, he's going to be super cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we played in a league, or we did a mock with Walker where he took Russ and Anthony Richardson, where I was like,
yeah,
how's it any different than Tua and Kirk? You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Grant, those guys have a higher floor to me, but it's still, you're doing the same mechanic here.
That's all right. Exactly it.
So per 4 for 4, Russ is QB 18 between our guys here, Jared Goff and Derek Carr. So Goff, Derek Carr, or Russell Wilson?
Jared Goff. Easy peasy, Jared Goff.
With Detroit? Screw it. I'm going Derek Carr. New team.
The band is back together, baby. No divorce. All right, here we go. All right, so I'm going to work my way up through the chain on fantasy viability, so please bear with me as I blow through tight end and running back, because I don't really feel like they'll be fantasy relevant this year. Last year, tight end was pretty miserable for the Broncos, as well as the Broncos as a whole. There were 101 targets to the tight end position, which looks good, but they were divided across 4 tight ends. Luckily, Greg Dulcich got a majority of those targets with 55 for 411 yards with a 12.5 yards per reception, which is really good, with a 91% snap share as a receiving option, which honestly is really juicy compared to like Kyle Pitts, who's running 71% of his snaps as a receiver. So Dulcich ran out of the slot 58 times, out wide 29, and inline 33%. The share will obviously change as passing structure is going to change with Peyton. And more receivers are coming in, and this scheme is going to be a little different. But if we do project an increase in passing volume from 570 attempts to around 600 to 620 attempts, based on Peyton's previous snap share, we can kind of conservatively estimate around 120 targets at the tight end position. And with the current room of Dulcich, Albert O, and Adam Trautman, I still do believe that Dulcich will get the lion's share of that with around 70 targets is kind of my estimated. It's a lot. I know that was, I was being Ryan in the moment.
No, I think that's an accurate number. So you got 55 last year and he's going to get 70. I think
I don't know. I'm good estimate. All I'm saying is like, he missed time to start the year. He averaged 5.5 targets a game last year. If playing with throughout a full season, he ends up with 6.5 targets. That's 110. That's all I'm saying.
Damn. 100. Damn.
Like 5.5 targets a game over 17 games is what, 90 something?
I mean, yeah. I'm all for it.
So like, there's a chance. I think you've given me a good floor, and I think I'm going ceiling here. So I think the answer will be somewhere in the middle, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, because too, like, nobody was really hurt aside from Tim Patrick last year, right? Like, it wasn't like the Chargers where they had a bunch of injuries and they had to force a Trautman. Like, Jerry Jeudy was healthy the whole year. Courtland Sutton was healthy the whole year. Kendall Hilton was healthy the whole year. You know what I mean? So there's clearly targets going somewhere for a reason. At least in that scheme. I mean, it's different coaching scheme, different offensive scheme. Joe Lombardi doesn't really use a tight end position, but we'll see. But I think.
Sorry, real quick. I just wanted to make sure I didn't forget. Dulcich played 10 games last year and had 55 targets.
Okay.
Those are like, I love his projection to get like, you know.
Yeah.
Could maybe have 100 targets this year. Question is if they're good targets. Right.
Correct. Yes. But I think that short intermittent is going to be a lot better. Like I said, I think Peyton's going to really coach Russ up to be like, hey, knock that shit off, otherwise I'm leaving. So last year, Dulcich finished as tight end 29. Currently, he's ranked as tight end 13 per 4-for-4 between Schultz and Chig. So pick one of those guys, Dulcich, Schultz, or Chig.
Ooh, that's tough. Well, with the numbers you just gave me about Dulcich, I think I'm going to go with Dulcich. Chig's close, but I think I like that 5.5 average targets a game.
I like Dalton Schultz this year. I'm not going to lie to you. I really do. But I would rather pay, because you're going to draft Dulcich a little bit ahead of Schultz and right at where you would draft Okonkwo, right? So
yeah. Give between me 9 and 12.
Yeah, give me Dulcich, because like, when everyone's looking at Goddard, Njoku, Evan Engram in like round 7, 8, and 9, I'm looking at Adam Thielen, Jerick McKinnon, Zach Charbonnet, like, and then you get Dulcich two rounds later. So you're getting pretty much, if Dulcich pops, you're getting the same production as an Evan Engram, Goddard, Njoku, and you're improving in those other round picks where people are picking up tight ends.
Yeah, these guys are definitely the case where your team is fine. Right, you don't need the tight end position. You've just like, all right, well, I'm not going to reach for a guy just to fill the draft slot on my team. That's a stupid exercise. I'll just take the best player available, have a better bench slot.
Correct.
Where I think you're going to obviously prioritize these guys more at a higher pick in a two tight end premium or a deeper league when you have to start more players and so forth. So, I think Dulcich is fine. Is priced appropriately, and like you were saying, Tony, I think he has a good ROI compared to his draft capital in comparison to that where the tight ends finish, right? Like tight end 6 and 12, it was 10 points. So he has one game with 9 targets. He jumps up 6 slots.
Right. Look at fucking Cole Kmet last year.
Yeah. All right. So everyone else has asked, don't waste your time. Albert O sucks. Sorry.
Yep.
So onto the running backs. Last year, the Broncos rostered 8 running backs. Obviously, that number is inflated as Javonte shredded his knee. All 8 of those players combined put up 2,000 yards and 706 total receiving yards with 111 targets, a 19% target share, which is like pretty bad for like the running back room, at least in my opinion of target share compared to like what we want to see in fantasy, right?
Correct.
And it's great if you get that number between two dudes, but trying to chop it up really difficult and really ugly to kind of project, because most dudes had like the same amount of targets. It was like 20, 20, 20, 35, 20.
Sure.
So the current running backs on this roster are Samaje Perine, Tyler Batty, Tony Jones, Damaria Crockett, and Javonte Williams. So right off the rip, Javonte tore his ACL, MCL, and LCL. So I'm not even going to project any fantasy viability from Javonte and save you all the trouble. Just don't draft him. Let him be somebody else's problem. We're all too sharp for that. There's plenty of free agents out there, like Fat Lenny, Dalvin Cook, and Zeke. So I think Denver might bring in another guy as they're obviously trying to push for a playoff contention here. This running back room is just so muddled to me where I don't want to touch it, especially like efficiency and everyone beating the drum for like a guy like Samaje Perine, not because of his skill, but just due to projected volume of, cause like there's nobody else right now. So everybody's trying to be cute and sharp in June or July being like, oh, he's going to be the one, but it's like, we know how he is. Last year, Perine only saw 38% snap share in a room that was just Joe Mixon, who was like incredibly mid.
And like they're going to use multiple backs.
Yes.
They're going to use multiple backs. And if you're drafting Perine at the same time, you're recognizing that by mid season, sure, they're going to be working Javonte back in, but you're only drafting a Jag because of his opportunity, right? So yes. I'm telling you, I don't know if you're agreeing right now, but I think we can all kind of agree that that opportunity share goes down as the season goes on.
Yep.
Like,
because someone might get hurt, so it might be free, right? They can cut a Henderson like they did last year. Kareem Hunt could go, you know what I mean? They might pick somebody up. So yep. Perine is graded out to be a pretty good pass blocker by PFF, so I think that's why he stays on the field as third down back, as well as his pass catching ability. So even if we are giving Perine a generous 50% of the passing game work, that's 60 targets for the year and not a very good player. So we're really shooting for a Jerick McKinnon type ceiling, which is really bad, right? Like, hey, here's this 10th round guy. And I'm not going to waste my time unless I have a starter go down or I'm playing Shane's shitty running back touchdown of the week that runs adjacent to Ryan's shitty tight end touchdown of the week. So per 4 for 4, this fucking blew my mind. Perine is running back 35 between Antonio Gibson and Brian Robinson around the 8th round. So who would you pick? Antonio Gibson, Brian Robinson, or Samaje Perine?
I mean, I already know Ryan's answer.
Yeah, it's Robinson.
I'll take Gibson. I'll get hurt.
3 years in a row. Give me Gibby.
But all right.
I'm kind of in on Brian Robinson this year just because, like, he is quote-unquote the lead back. Yeah, he's not sexy, but, like, 8th round starting running back, give me the option.
We'll talk. I got some thoughts here in a little bit on the next episode.
Yeah, his efficiency sucks.
Can I just say, I looked at way too much stuff about Sean Payton's history for this episode to not say this. Sean Payton's best running back season in all of the seasons that he was a play caller, the most carries any of his running backs got in a year was 244. That would have been not ninth in 2022. So if you average out all the Sean Payton offenses, all the Joe Lombardi offenses, the running back that had the most carries, that averaged out to 176 carries. That would have been running back 31 last year. That would have been as many carries as Jeff Wilson had.
What?
So I don't want anything to do with this backfield.
Committee. That's it.
Next year, Javonte, like, I like Javonte if you have a deep bench, if you are playing a keeper league, but he's too expensive, right? He's too expensive for a guy that we like. Look at how Dobbins was this year. He didn't do shit for the first half of the season.
And even then, when he came back, he had like one good game and that was it.
And he never had more than 50% snaps when he came back. So they're still easing him back in because this is called a MLKI multi-ligament knee injury. And they're like, yo, this takes a year and a half. Sorry.
Yeah, he shredded his shit. I think he tore part of his hamstring, too.
He tore something called a PCL.
Mm.
or no, sorry, a PLC. And I'm like, bro, that's like an education term. I don't even know what the fuck that is.
It's a peanut ligament.
There it is. So I want, allergy. I'm not Denver backfield. I'm good. You can have it.
I will say though, however, there's always one dude who comes out of fucking nowhere for the year. And I will on July 1st say it could be Tyler Beatty. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. That's how of a sleeper he is, right? Because his college tape was good. Granted, he sat on the practice squad all year for the Ravens, but when he did enter into the Broncos, he did have one rushing attempt for 0 yards, one reception for a single touchdown. So if they don't bring anybody in with Javonte still being ass, Samaje Perine being incredibly mid, he could be a free volume play. I don't know, right? Like,
Would you take Tyler Beatty over Josh Kelly if you were like last round of a best ball league?
No, I still want the Chargers. Josh Kelly has shown he can. I don't like Josh Kelly. I think he's sucks, but I think the way he's going to be utilized is like he's shown he can get like 3.5 yards on average, right? So
all I'm saying is I have like 80% exposure to Josh Kelly on best ball drafts right now.
Yeah, because you're getting ahead of all the people who are taking Eckler at 103. Like, those people are just stupid, right?
Dude, I'm getting him in round 18.
Yeah, that's like, free. It's like Fat Lenny.
He's like my last pick. And dude, Fat Lenny's going in like round 12, 13, 14.
Blows my mind. He doesn't have to play half the season. He'll still return investment.
And so I'm just holding on to Josh Kelly. I love him as a late round pick. Ryan, I have 100% exposure to Rashid Shaheed. Every single one of my teams.
Hell yeah.
All right. Sorry, Shane.
No, that's fine. That's way more interesting than the shit I was talking about. So
so basically don't take any Denver players in your redrafts this year, as noticed as we started talking about the Chargers.
There are wide receivers though. So this is the most convoluted point and potentially the most game breaking component of the team. I think this is really like the Josh Palmer conundrum that Tony is trying to figure out for the Chargers, as we do have to kind of figure out five wide receivers and how they fit in the scheme, even though we have to dissect 11. So as of July 1st, the Broncos have 11 wide receivers on their roster, which they're obviously going to be cut down on. But like, why? Why do you have this many players going to the offseason? Nobody's that good. So I'm going to kind of make lazy analysis here of comparisons in comparison to the Chargers and the Broncos in regards to what player I believe fits what role and how we kind of can assume target share going forward. So last year, the slot was mainly Keenan Allen and DeAndre Carter. While Keenan was out, Mike Williams, Jalen Guyton, and Palmer all lined up out wide. So there's five guys again on the Broncos, and we'll probably see a similar pathway for Jerry Jeudy as the slot guy, Cortland Sutton as the out wide guy. I don't know how Tim Patrick, KJ Hamler, or Kendall Hinton fit into this. I think Hamler is a cut because he had like 20 targets last year and was going to fight Russ on the field. They brought in my dog, Marvin Mims, who I think is going to take Sutton's job, even though he's a little bit smaller because he plays outside way better.
Sure.
Last year, Jerry Jeudy had the most slot snaps with 259 and 50% of his total snaps going to that position, while 46% came running out wide, which lines up pretty much one for one with Keenan Allen's snap share percentage and being the number one option on the team.
He's going to do the Keenan Allen thing, right?
Yeah, he has to. It's his skill set. And fortunately, I think Sean Payton will find that out. I mean, we know how good Michael Thomas can be running slants, right? So just give Jerry Jeudy the slot and be like, hey, here's 45 or 145 targets. Go fucking nuts.
Yeah.
So even though he was the number one option last year, none of his metrics are really outstanding. He did have some top 12, such as yards per target, deep target quality, but everything else he ranks around 15 to 20, very middle of the pack. And our basic expectation, I know Tony and I talked about this as well, is wide receiver two on your team. He's been a flex for me personally for the last 2 years, and he's right there kind of where I've taken him. I think this whole round four ADP and expecting a projected breakout, even though I just said he might have the Michael Thomas target share, I just don't think it's how it's going to happen. There's just too many mouths to feed. I think Sean Payton's too much of a smart coach to just force feed one guy when the wide receiving room is so open and they just spent draft capital to draft a new guy. So I don't really think he can go much further than his slot of wide receiver 21, but I do believe he can crack a top 15 finish just based on increase in volume and assumed improved accuracy from Russ. I'm not personally comfortable as my wide receiver 1-to-1 week to week, but that's just my play style. I really draft wide receivers in the first two rounds and 3 and 4 kind of where things shake out.
Yeah.
There are going to be booms there, which I don't fault people for being there, but with a 20% target share for a guy you're projecting to be your wide receiver too, I really don't see the massive breakout, as his red zone targets do rank 40th and 44th in routes run for yards per points, something like that. They do place a ceiling on him unless those two metrics change.
Well, that's the struggle, right? So he had 6 touchdowns, but 3 of them were in one game.
Yeah.
I over a third of his total receiving yards were over 3 games last year. So like,
that's how he always is, though. He always has those games a year where he just goes nuclear and everybody falls for the bait.
Yeah. Well, if he's consistent this year, I had him. What did I have? Let me pull it up real quick. I had him between 125 and 140 targets, 85 catches, 1,150 yards, 6 touchdowns, which is like wide receiver 15.
Yeah. That's kind of where I had him, too. I had 125 to 135 targets on my estimate.
Ryan, you love Judy?
I'm not going to be big on anyone in Denver this year.
That's fair, man.
That's the move. So I do believe, though, that even though he can rack up 980 yards in a season, being 88th in route win rate, 78th in win rate versus man, there's still some dog in him with 14.5 yards per reception. So 4-for-4 has him around Christian Watson, Jerry Jeudy, and Drake London. So pick one.
Christian Watson, Jerry Jeudy, Drake London. Ugh, I hate all three of these guys. I'm going Jeudy because he's the one I hate least.
I'll go London.
All right, next one. Travis Etienne, Jerry Jeudy, Terry McLaurin.
Etienne.
Jerry Jeudy, Etienne, or McLaurin?
Yeah.
I'll go Scary Terry.
You guys are getting me so excited to do the Commanders. Oh, man, hell yeah.
Yeah, because they're the most boring team in the NFL. We got to get some hype, right?
This is you guys trying to sell the second episode right now.
All right, so next up is the Mike Williams of this team, Courtland Sutton. So he ran the most out wide and is projected the same this year based on his skill set. Sutton only had 9 more targets, 109, than Jerry Jeudy and 4 less catches than Jeudy, but he had 160 less yards and 4 less touchdowns. I don't see how this changes as he has knocks, as his knocks and positive are the same for Jeudy with him, but a way worse yards after the catch and efficiency metrics. He does get more red zone targets than Jeudy, and he was number 1 at the position in wide receiver with a route participation rate of 100%, which means for every single play Sutton ran a route, so that has to equate to something, right? Tony, can you give me your stats on Courtland Sutton over the last couple of years?
Yeah. Ryan, you ready for this?
Yeah.
Do you have your vomit receptacle ready? Courtland Sutton had 109 targets last year and ended up as wide receiver 40.
Wow.
So let me give you some other wide receivers that had between 105 and 115 targets. Brandon Ayuk had 4 more targets than Courtland Sutton last year. T. Higgins had the same exact amount of targets as Courtland Sutton last year.
Wow.
And Hollywood Brown had 107 targets last year in like 12 games. So Courtland Sutton is one of the least efficient receivers in football. And can we be honest, dude? Like his finishes, his fantasy finishes every year. His rookie year, wide receiver 63. I get it. 2019, wide receiver 27 was his big year, right? And then he missed all of 2020 with an injury. 2021, wide receiver 51. 2022, wide receiver 40. Nope. Goodbye.
He just ain't him.
And all that's, right. I think it's Marvin Mims time, baby.
Dude, they drafted him for a reason, right? Sean Payton clearly saw these dudes all fucking suck. I'm going to use my second round draft capital to trade up to pick a guy. I will get to Marvin Mims really quick, but we got to do the either or guy. And then I got to talk some shit on Tim Patrick and Kendall Hinton and all them. So for Cortland Sutton, he's way down there at wide receiver 48. Michael Thomas, Cortland Sutton, or J-Mo?
J-Mo.
Michael Thomas. Well, yeah. We don't really know what's going to happen with Michael Thomas. I mean, is he going to be the same player? But yeah, I'll go J-Mo.
Yeah. Okay.
Cortland Sutton or James Cook?
James Cook, and then I'm immediately trying to trade him.
Yeah,
he scores one touchdown. He's on the block.
That's true.
So I filled your enough of your time with this division between all these players. So the people of Tim Patrick, Kendall Hinton, and KJ Hamler is someone in the trio I'm not even going to be considering the option for. Don't even flip the coin. Just move on. But if we are going to follow the money, Tim Patrick did get an extension before he got hurt. So take him in your super deep best balls. I don't know, man. If he's the fourth option, the fifth option, maybe. But I'm going to talk my shit on Marvin Mims real quick, even though I don't see him really as a viable fantasy asset right now, unless things change, right? So if they trade Sutton because they're like, yeah, you suck, bro, you got to go. Like I said, Peyton did use his first ever draft pick as a Broncos head coach to trade up to draft him. It does look convoluted to him, but it does signal to me that in a projected room, it's going to look a lot different if they're drafting a wide receiver to go with 10 other guys. So clearly he's the cream of the crop who they value. He's got great rapport with the scouts and coaches. So I don't think he's going to be viable fantasy-wise this year. But if you are in a keeper league, take him in a late round, see what's up. He could be a top 25 guy next year that you got for free in the 18th round.
I think he's going to get increased snaps as the season goes on.
Yeah, he'll be a waiver wire guy for sure. So last year, the Broncos did run three wide receiver sets 62.4% of the time, and that is going to change a little bit due to Peyton, but it's just going to come down to like the Chargers of picking out who we believe is the best gem at ADP there. And even with Judy, like, I still think Judy is the best pick at ADP, unless you're going to get Marvin Mims for free on the waiver wire. All right, so I've reached full speed. We're going to take it to a gallop before we put us in the stable. Russ is fine. Prioritize him as a waiver wire pickup if one of your guys falls apart. Dulcich is whatever normal formats. If you're picking up, your team's already set everywhere else and you don't really need to be too worried about the tight end slot. Do not draft any running backs from this team as of right now unless Fat Lenny comes into town. Judy has wide receiver 2 floor with potential wide receiver 1 boom upside weeks. So unless his red zone target shares go up, I'm more inclined to take him. But as of right now, I don't really want to take him. Don't draft Cortland Sutton. Take Mims as a late keeper. That's the Broncos.
There it is. Let's ride. We just rode.
I want to get off this ride.
Let's get off this ride right now. Let's call this a quick episode, and then we'll hop in and we'll cover the Dallas Cowboys and Washington Commanders. So we'll see you soon. Thanks for sticking around. Go Broncos.
To the bottom of the AFC West.
They're the worst. Goodbye.